Good morning and welcome to True Talk. This is your host, Samar Jarrah. As we promised, this month we're going to be talking about the 20th anniversary of September 11 attacks and different issues that we had to deal with as Americans and as American Muslims. One of the things that we ended up with is having this show, which is called True Talk. My co-host Ahmed Bedir and myself have been doing it more than 17 or 18 years. I can't remember. But today we're going to be talking from a different perspective, from art. How art dealt with this tragic catastrophe. So we're going to be talking with Andrea Assaf. She's a writer, performer, director, facilitator, and cultural organizer. She's the artistic executive director of Art to Action. And we spoke to Andrea before in the past few years. And we also were able to talk to some of the artists that she brought into the area. Andrea is from the Tampa area. Listen to this segment of the new film that we're going to be talking about. It's called 11 Reflections on September. And here is a segment from this. We always welcome your emails to dj@wmnf.org and your phone calls. Listen here.
I was trying to remember the beginning of September and everything that came before. I was blank for the first few moments, just void. At the white down, someone else's blanket I'd been under for days. I was trying to remember the beginning of September and everything that came before. The shattered glass. The acrid smell of asbestos and flesh singeing the lungs and soul. I was trying to remember where I had been in the days before and what a beach looked like.
If you're just joining us, this is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM, and I am pleased to say that I am joined on the phone by Andrea Assaf. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning.
Good to have you on the show, Andrea. It's been a while. I think we, Ahmed and I, met you maybe more than 15 years ago. I can't remember exactly. And you had just moved to Tampa, I think. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background, your artistic background, and your education?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and to be on True Talk and WMNF. I am Lebanese-American, and I'm a theater artist, writer, director, and performer, and I write poetry and text for live performance. And I actually got my first degree as a BFA from New York University, or NYU, and then my master's degree also in performance studies from NYU. So I was a New Yorker for a long time before moving to Tampa.
Where were you on September 11?
I had, ironically, just moved back to New York City from D.C. on September 1st, 2001. And I was actually in D.C. that day, signing a contract and kind of closing up my apprenticeship that I'd been doing in D.C. Before moving back to New York. And I actually was able to see the smoke from the Pentagon from where I was staying in Adams Morgan in D.C. And then I turned on the television expecting to see what was happening in Washington and instead saw New York.
What was your reaction? Like, not at the event, but like in the back of your mind, were you thinking, oh my gosh, does this involve Arabs?
I'm not sure that that was my first thought. Of course, I was shocked, which the piece you just played is the first piece in the show, 11 Reflections on September, and it tried to capture that feeling of shock and disorientation. And I think, you know, I've always had a kind of post-colonial and anti-imperialism analysis and look at the U.S. and U.S. policy. And there was as the tragedy of it was sinking in, there was also a part of me that thought somebody actually did this. Somebody actually had the gall to attack the United States, and it was just very hard to wrap our brains around, even in that moment, and for some time after, I think.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, you know, pretty soon though they started talking about Arabs and Middle Easterners on the news, and then it began to sink in that our communities were going to be targeted for the backlash that came after.
Did that scare you?
Yes, terribly. It was, and it was very disorienting also because, you know, being a New Yorker in the 90s and the turn of the millennium was, you know, it was very much about cosmopolitanism, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. there's this, you know, diversity that cities have and anonymity that you can kind of, and I think being, you know, mixed white American and Lebanese, I've always been in a kind of, you know, people kind of wonder what I am. Mm-hmm. And there's this kind of vague exotic without people necessarily knowing or recognizing my Arab heritage. But then after 9/11, that changed dramatically and immediately. It really became an accusation to be Arab or to be Muslim, became like an accusation. And it was very deeply disturbing how quickly that happened.
I just want to remind our listeners that are listening to True Talk, and this is the co-host, Samar Jarrah. My co-host might not be joining us today. He has some technical difficulties joining by Zoom. But I'm talking to Andrea Assaf. She's a writer, performer, director, facilitator, and cultural organizer. We're going to be talking about all these things. But she's also artistic executive director of Art to Action, and there is a new film that just came out, and it's called 11 Reflections on September. And I think we've played the CD before several times before, and we're talking about Andrea. We're with Andrea, and you can join the conversation by sending emails to dj@wmnf.org, dj@wmnf.org. Later on, maybe the second half of the show, second half hour, we're going to open the phone lines. Last week, Andrea, we got more than 14 emails. I didn't even have enough time to write about them. A lot of people are interacting with our show because we have a different slant and a different way of looking at it. So quite different than the mainstream media, except for you know, a show like Democracy Now, who is aware of Orientalism and all that you had mentioned. But Andrea, I don't mean to be asking personal questions, but you are not a Muslim, are you? Are you a Muslim?
Correct. No, I'm not. As I mentioned, I'm Lebanese American. I was raised Catholic. My family was Maronite, Catholic.
The reason I ask Andrea is because I know from like the name Andrea and from the name Asaf, which is an Arabic name that can be both Muslim and Christian, because there is a famous Palestinian singer called Muhammad Asaf. But I know that in Lebanon, Asaf could be a Christian name. And the reason I ask you this, because people thought maybe that only Muslim Americans were afraid, but the larger society does not recognize, you know, that there are Christian Arabs who can also be going through the same psychological impact that I, as a Muslim, was going through. And this is the only reason I'm asking you, Andrea. But
Well, absolutely. I want to say about that, you know, the impact of the rise of Islamophobia in the United States and in the world post 9/11 has affected so many people regardless of religion, because of the way that racism, especially in the United States, interacts with xenophobia and religious prejudice. And so absolutely, as you say, you know, Christians, Druze, Arab Jews, people of all religions have been impacted by Islamophobia because it is intertwined with racism against anyone who, you know, looks Arab, whatever people think that looks like. And so you find, you know, attacks against Sikhs who are from India. You find attacks against Latinos who happen to have a last name like Medina, and it's affected so many people across so many communities.
It's true, Andrea, because even with the Timothy McVeigh attack, which was done by a white Catholic American, also there was some attacks on non-Muslims and Sikh and Indian. And I remember our local paper had to do some like sketches of a picture of a Sikh and a picture of a Muslim wearing the, what they called it, the turban. And they were trying to explain to people that if you see somebody wearing this kind of thing on his head, this is not a Muslim, so don't attack him. They didn't say that, but like trying to explain these things to people. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe that we have to go through this, because you and I assumed that we live in a cosmopolitan world, but obviously, no, it was not. And I want to ask you, Andrea, and I'm already receiving emails. I'm going to read them throughout the time, and people are already asking you questions and thanking me, actually, Andrea, for having you on the show. But as an artist, how did you react to this?
Well, you know, I'm an artist because that's how I process strong emotion, and it's how I make sense of the world. So I started writing poetry shortly after 9/11 as a way to just deal with all of the multiple things I was thinking and feeling and responding to, both as a New Yorker processing the tragedy of what happened to our city, and as an Arab American experiencing the backlash and realizing that our country was about to go to war. And we've just marked the 20th anniversary of 9/11, but in a couple weeks we will mark another 20th anniversary, which is the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan and the longest war in U.S. history. And we can see that the impacts of that are still unfolding in the most tragic way. So I just began writing because it's what I needed to do. And it actually took me years to begin to compile those poems into a series and then later into a theatrical production. And most recently during the pandemic, it evolved into a digital film, which is available now through the Arab American National Museum, actually until midnight tonight. So I hope people will check it out.
Yeah, we're going to be playing segments. So this segment that I played at the beginning took you years to write, Andrea?
No, that one I wrote, that was actually one of the first pieces I wrote, but it wasn't until 2007 that I started to compile these individual poems of responding to specific historic events into a kind of series or collection. And then in 2011, I was able to stage it with musicians and a media designer for the first time at Pangea World Theater in Minneapolis. And it toured as a theater show for several years on and off. And as I said, the pandemic kind of forced us to reimagine it into a digital form, which was an extraordinary process.
And how was the reaction? Because I have seen you in the studio, and when you performed it, you as a human being transform from the same person I'm talking to, very quiet, very very quiet, not emotional, and all of a sudden, like a million vibes of emotion comes that I was mesmerized. How was the reaction? Because there is a difference, our listeners, between listening to it, and I'm going to play it again, and then really seeing Andrea doing and reading the poem. It's very, very, very emotional. So how did, like, you live the words and you act the words and you perform the words with your hands, with your mouth, with your eyes, and you have big, beautiful eyes so they you can enlarge them and then close them and then, like, huge eyes. So I'm trying just to be descriptive how there is a huge difference between listening and watching you. And this is, I think, where my first time ever to realize that really there is a huge difference between reading poetry and listening to the poet himself or herself, reading it and then seeing he or she. So how did people react? And, you know, the sentiments are still fresh in the minds of people.
Reactions have... really been quite vast over the years in different venues and communities. But always people react in a very heartfelt and I think honest way. My hope for doing this work is that when you enter the realm of poetry and music and song and imagery, you know, we can kind of break through the talking points and rhetoric that we're accustomed to in news cycles or from politicians or mainstream media, and we can connect with each other in a heartfelt way, even if we are our lived experiences are very different. And that's, you know, to me, that's what's powerful about art, is that it can get us to think and feel in new ways and make new kinds of dialogue possible. And I truly believe that that's where change starts to happen between people.
Let me play this poetry and poem by Andrea Assaf. And please, you can always join the conversation by sending your comments to dj@wmnf.org. I already received several emails. I'm going to start reading them. And some of them are addressed to Andrea, and some of them are kind of general. But let's listen to this poem. Okay, I think I have the wrong file. Okay, not sure what's wrong here.
If we do hear some of the vocals, I want to acknowledge the extraordinary vocalist in this piece. Her name is Lubana El Kuntar, and she is an opera singer and classical air music singer from Syria.
So that's the sound that I just played. That's her, Lubna. Okay, I'm trying to get the one. Let me try Lubna, and then you tell us later on about her. وجهك بذكر بالخريف ترجع لك
مثل الهوى اللي مبلش عالخفيف. القصة مش طقس يا حبيبي، هي قصة ماضي كان عنيف، بس هلأ ما بتذكر شكل وجهك، بس
If you're just joining us, this is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM, and I'm talking to Andrea Assaf. So who is Lubna?
Lubna Alcantara.
Lubna or Lubna?
Yes. She's a singer from Syria. She was, in fact, the first voice in the National Opera of Syria before the current war. And she also sings classical Arab music and popular music. Her range is just quite extraordinary as a performer. And I actually met her through another project Art to Action was doing when we were supporting the development of an opera called Fallujah by Iraqi American playwright Heather Raffo, and Lubna was in the cast. And when I first heard her sing, I just thought, oh my gosh, she's extraordinary. And I always wanted the opportunity to work with her, and thankfully she said yes to this project. She currently lives in the Washington, D.C. area, and she's just an amazing collaborator and really did most of the selection of the Arabic songs that are in the digital film.
So what was she saying? I don't know if you know Arabic, but I'm sure you know. Can you tell our listeners what was she singing? What was she saying?
Well, I can give you the background of the selection rather than a translation because I don't actually speak Arabic. But I asked, and this is what's extraordinary about her, is that there's so few singers that you could ask for, classical Arab music and a taqdim, and then also some Mozart, and then also a jazz standard, and she can do all of it. And so I had asked her if she could sing the jazz standard Autumn Leaves, which she does sing in English in the digital film. And then we found that Fairuz had done with the Rabbani brothers, had done a kind of almost parody version of Autumn Leaves in Arabic. But she listened to the Fairuz version, and she selected particular lines that she felt resonated with the overall piece, 11 Reflections on September. And so she opens Autumn Leaves with these Arabic lines and then switches into English for the jazz standard.
And can I read some of the emails, Andrea, and you pick and choose whatever you want to answer? And I managed now to hook the file, because the files you sent me, they just play for a minute and a half for some reason. So I'm going to read a few emails, and it's up to you which ones you pick to answer or comment on. This is Doug from Clearwater. He says, I'm 52 years old, male of white descent. I hope the Proud Boys figure it out, and the Israelis and the Middle East and find peace. And then I have from, I don't know the name here. Here is the problem: when the idea that it took Gaul to attack the U.S. is the time when you knew it had to happen. David, he says, hi, Samar. Thanks so much for bringing this great guest on your show today. I was curious about how you felt about President Bush's reaction to Muslim and Arabs after 9/11. Did Bush do enough to try and prevent violence against Muslims and Arabs in America? That's from David. And then we have Jeff, I saw a recent clip of George W. Bush talking about terrorism and 9/11. He mentioned the January 6th incident and suggested that the new terrorist threat might be domestic terrorists. I guess what goes around comes around. And These are the emails that I have received. Any comments, Andrea?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's actually quite fascinating to see the transformation of George W. Bush's rhetoric from 20 years ago to now. It is quite different, and I am glad that he acknowledged domestic terrorism and particularly white nationalism, which has always been a problem in the United States, and you know, the Ku Klux Klan being probably the most famous example, that we haven't always called or treated like terrorism, and it is well past time that we do address it as such, because I do believe it's a national threat. It's always been a threat to communities of color, but as we saw on January 6th, it's now a threat to our entire democracy. But, you know, responding to the George W. Bush at the time, you know, the rhetoric was very explicitly warmongering, and I don't think there was any concern given to how that would affect communities of Middle Eastern descent or Muslims in the United States at the time. And the, you know, great contradiction of it that I hope history will continue to unpack and critique is that the Bush family, of course, being an oil family, had very close ties to Saudi Arabia. And even though we invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, the majority of the hijackers involved in 9/11 were, of course, Saudi. And so I think it's really interesting to see Biden now beginning to release classified documents 20 years later. And I wonder how much of that information will be released and what we will really learn from it. But, you know, I think that at the time in 2001, George W. Bush and his administration had the plan to go to war, certainly against Iraq and Saddam Hussein, but in general, they had an agenda for the Middle East that 9/11 was a very convenient political excuse for. And, you know, I think we'll still be learning the true reasons behind that for a very long time.
What is sad, Andrea, is I do not see retrospective, studying of should we have gone to the war, shouldn't we have gone to the war. I mean, some people are evaluating when it comes to Afghanistan, like you mentioned, in a few weeks we're going to be remembering 20 years when we launched this war on that country. And we have spoken about it, Ahmed and I, in the past few weeks from several angles. But to me, the human loss, whether in Afghanistan, whether in Iraq among civilians or among the military who died there, the soldiers, all in vain. Like, what was the end result? I don't see, Andrea, any re-evaluation, any serious discussion about these failed foreign policies. Do you think art might replace, I was asking Dr. Zunis 2 weeks ago, can universities do mock trials? Can they do people's court and discuss these things and do some sort of, I thought when I was talking to him about college, but now that I'm talking to you as an artist, can artists do plays or have mock trials and discuss these things? Because nobody's discussing these important issues.
Yes, absolutely. I do think that's the role of art, is to open a space for the conversations that we're not able to have in mainstream media or discourse. I do think that the stage and live performance and now what artists are creating digitally, all of it is a form of alternative media, in the way that also stations like WMNF and community radio and Democracy Now, which you mentioned, are alternative media. I think artists have a very strong role to play in asking questions and provoking dialogue and bringing new perspectives. And I also want to lift up something I've been involved in the last couple of years is the creation of a new national network called the Middle East and North African Theater Makers Alliance, or MENATMA, and you can find it at minatheater.org online. But we're really starting to, you know, post 9/11, build these networks connecting artists across the U.S. And in the Middle East to, you know, kind of gain power in terms of public presence and voice. And how we're able to support each other and raise the visibility of this kind of work and the issues that it addresses. And I also want to mention that there's on a website called HowlRound, howlround.org, there's a podcast called Kanafa and Shea, and they're going to be featuring Afghani artists or artists of Afghan descent. And I really encourage people to check that out and just continue to hear more perspectives and more voices that question the really tragic policies and horrible mistakes that we've made as a nation in the last 20 years.
Can you spell the last website that you gave? How do you spell it?
Yes. HowlRound is an online commons for theater artists. It's HowlRound.org.
Okay. And are there many Arab and Muslim American artists in different fields? Like, for instance, Ahmed and I interviewed Dean Ubaidallah and several comedians. I remember one was from Iran. I forgot his name, and one from Egypt, and Dean Ubaidallah. We actually interviewed a Texas country music Egyptian. We interviewed another Egyptian who is like a political science professor, mass communication professor, but he has always felt that he can do rap music, and we featured two of his songs. Poetry, really, it's you. And I remember one time, Andrea, there was a lady from Iran, and she was playing strange instruments that I haven't seen before. Are there many people out there outside comedy that are from Arab and Muslim descent?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, there, it used to be that there were maybe a handful of Middle Eastern theaters in the United States that you could count on one hand. And now there are new companies and younger artists creating organizations and more connections and more visibility. There are great organizations like RAWI, the Radius of Arab American Writers, and the Arab American National Museum is always doing great programming. There are artists in so many different genres, as you said, from poetry and hip hop to comedy to music, certainly, and visual arts. And so I really think that one of the, if there's any positive after effect of the tragedy of 9/11 and all the tragedies that it unleashed, I think it's what I would describe as the rise of a new cultural movement in the United States in which Arab, Muslim, and Middle Eastern artists started to find each other and build community and connect and uplift each other's work and thereby increase our visibility and voice. And so I encourage everyone who's listening to check out more artists. You can always find more artists at arttoaction.org through our website. We're always featuring Middle Eastern artists. In fact, earlier this week, we did a session online with Naomi Shihab Nye, who is a Palestinian American poet and the poet laureate for young people in the United States right now. So I love uplifting other people's work and getting our communities to know more artists. So please Falworth and check us out.
I'm going to talk about R2U Action in a second. Let me try and play this segment from this new film, and maybe Andrea can tell us a little bit about it. And I'm getting more emails. The email here is dj@wmnf.org, and I'm talking to Andrea Assaf, who is a writer, performer, director, facilitator, and cultural organizer. She's also the founder of Art to Action. Here is a segment from a new film called 11 Reflections on September. And I hope it's going to play. Let's see, DJ. Oh, yeah.
The shadows of the fallen glide quickly over the corpses of the sunken, perfectly preserved, exactly as they fell. One floats submerged as if alive. Serenity disturbed only by the rustling of those still on the branch. Wind ripples surface and catches their reflection, and I wonder, do they see themselves? If they ever look down. Sun shines through veins and brightest at the edge of shadow. And when she hides, the sunken disappear, submerged by the mirage of clouds and the memory of the floating. So many counter currents now, it doesn't matter which way the water flows, it's littered with death in all directions. Then the long one. Violet, red, and burning orange, the one we never thought would fall. The beautiful, the strong. He too let go, as if held only by a drop of dew. The dirt is cold, the water colder. Sun bounces blinding off the surface of so much silence. Suddenly broken by a boy's distant scream and a helicopter overhead. See, every time I see a tree, I see its brilliance and wonder how many more. How to create in this world of destruction with so many ghosts. Just floating by. I sit on the banks of reality, so far, so far, without even a pen to write. Afghanistan.
If you're just joining us, this is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM. You were just listening to the spoken word of Andrea Assaf, who is on the phone with us. You can send us comments to dj@wmnf.org. Andrea, how did this film come about? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. So I've been working, as I said, on the theater production of 11 Reflections on September since 2011. And we were scheduled in 2020 to do a live performance at the Carver Community Cultural Center in San Antonio, Texas. And when the pandemic began, we, of course, just postponed everything for a year. And then as we were approaching May 2021, it seemed it became clear that it was still not a good time to do a live in-person performance. And travel, you know, fly everyone to Texas, and given the state of the COVID cases and the pandemic. So the carver asked us if we could transform the live work into a digital experience. And we said yes, without even fully understanding what that would entail. I think having musicians in four different states and designers in London. And we embarked on trying to figure out how to translate theater mm-hmm. to digital media. And what resulted, you know, thanks to the incredible artists on the team and all the collaborators, including our digital designer, Ava Elster, is just an extraordinary, I think it's really a new genre in a way between live performance and digital animation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like film. It's really a different form. And so once it was completed, we realized we had actually made a digital film, an art film. And so then I started submitting it to film festivals, and it's already garnered four official selections and an award for Best Experimental Feature from the Silk Road Film Awards in Cannes, France.
Mm.
So what I'm excited about, like kind of accidentally shifting from theater to film, is that it really creates the possibility of reaching new audiences, and that it's online and right now free through the Arab American National Museum. It just increases the accessibility of the work so much that is really exciting. And it was really very hard work, but very fun and exciting to see what resulted in exploring digital media with this project.
I feel that technology is really pushing the envelope and opening new horizons because, as I said, I saw you speak the poem, performing like in the studio, and I've listened to the CD. We've played it several times. But now the interpretation, like when you're talking about the helicopter and then the noise comes and then you're talking about leaves and people see leaves, but it's not in a movie kind. I don't know how to explain it to our listeners. Mm-hmm. It's a digital kind. It's a totally different mm-hmm. art, I feel. To me, I find like I have to watch it several times. This is not a movie. This is not a documentary. This is a form of art that I have not seen before. Maybe some musicals or maybe some of these modern songs people are, you know, producing. But this is different. Can I read a few emails, Andrea?
Sure.
Some of them are political and might not be directly related to the artwork, but you're an artist that deals with politics. So here is Baba, I guess his name. Imagine if Trump had been president on 9/11. That would have been a disaster. He's a con man and a coward. What do you think would have happened if it was Trump the president at that time? Oh, gosh. I don't know if I want to imagine that. There is another email. Should we have gone? Should we have left? There are still oils and minerals there. Sad, but 20 years was a long time for this consequence. And you have to ask the question of the violence before the Yankees and the Russians and the Taliban. Okay, another... what has not been discussed enough is why there is so much hate for USA. That's a very interesting question Nikki sent us. Why is there so much hate for the US? Have you felt, Andrea, before September 11, that there was hate? And I'm assuming that Nikki is asking about hate from, let me assume, the Arab world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will just say, when I've traveled in the Middle East, the vast majority of people do not express hate at all. They express political critique sometimes, curiosity, excitement about U.S. Culture. Many people still you know, there are many people around the world who would love to live here, or at least enjoy, you know, U.S. art and films and music. Hate for the U.S. is not something that I've actually encountered in any broad sense at all. Mm-hmm. If you talk about why are there armed movements against the U.S., then you have to begin to look seriously at U.S. policy and the impact of what we have done. I mean, if we talk about drone strikes, for example, which, you know, given is a more recent phenomenon, post 9/11 predominantly. But when people live under the constant fear of the U.S. military, and then inexplicably lose family members to something like a drone strike, we are not helping the world like the United States with policies like that. We are, in fact, when you look at, you know, absolute disasters that we have created, like the Abu Ghraib prison, you know, those things, you know, leaders of some of the organizations that are terrorist organizations that we are now, you know, in military conflict with or have been struggling with, some of them were actually at Abu Ghraib. We have a hand in creating the very violence that we then say we're fighting against. And the U.S. has done this historically in country after country. When you look at who our military has trained, mm-hmm. who has worked or been funded by the CIA, Osama bin Laden himself was funded and trained by the U.S. by the U.S. and the CIA at one point. So, you know, we have to look seriously at the impact of U.S. foreign intervention and military policy, and in order to understand what we are then experiencing and receiving. And none of it happens in a vacuum. But by and large, hate for the U.S. isn't something that I've encountered with regular people.
No, like you said, Andrea, from my travels, and I lived in 5 different Arab countries and I was born there. If there is any, and I don't want even to use the word hate, because I don't think it is hate as much as anger and frustration mm-hmm. with U.S. foreign policy. Because, for example, the governments that we finance and we support or we ignore when they violate human rights of their own citizens and people, for instance, I don't want to mention countries because I keep wanting to go and visit them, and I hope they're not, their mukhabarat and their intelligence are not listening. So I don't want to mention the countries, but we prop up dictators, we support them, and when there was, for instance, the Arab Spring. And supported at the beginning Hosni Mubarak, and then the military take over, and now they are supporting the authoritarian system. So, I mean, these people, there is no justification for what happened. People need to be clear. We're not justifying anything, but we are saying that there is not hate, but maybe there is criticism and anger towards our foreign policy, especially vis-a-vis the Arab world. Do you agree with me, Andrea?
Yeah, I do agree. And I think we have a terrible problem of historical amnesia in the United States. We very quickly forget how we got here. Mm-hmm. And even now, as people are lamenting the fall of Afghanistan to the Taliban, we forget that the U.S. helped create the Taliban. In the Reagan administration, Ronald Reagan had the Mujahideen to his to the White House and praised them for their supposed morality, and even said that they were aligned with the values of the founding fathers of the United States. He funded them to fight the Soviets, and they became the Taliban. And so we forget so quickly our own hand in creating what we are now facing. And until we really understand the history of our actions, I don't think that we can really understand how people around the world feel.
And do you want to comment about how things would have been if Trump was the president then?
You know, it's conjecture, and I don't really know what to say about that. I mean, the interesting thing is that Trump wasn't particularly a warmonger, and we are incredibly lucky because he is a person with fascist tendencies. And if he had been war hungry in the way that George W. Bush was, then I think we still might have been at war. But even in the Trump administration era that we just lived through, we could have had even more catastrophes. And he certainly was very scary when he talked about nuclear power.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's all conjecture. And I also should probably say that anything I say on this program is me as an individual artist and not speaking on behalf of my organization or any of our partners or funders. I'm really just talking as myself as an individual. You know, it's an interesting question. Maybe we wouldn't have started the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan under Trump, or maybe we would have ended up in nuclear war. So it's very hard to know.
I agree with you. Let me play, we're running out of time and I'm talking to Andrea Assaf. Let me play some segments, Andrea. This is from 11 Reflections on September. صوتك لسه الأغاني ممكنة from Raise Your Voice, We Still Can Sing. And I think from the images, Andrea, I can tell this is about Egypt and the January 25th.
Yes.
So what was...
I want to acknowledge, first of all, the musicians in that. The violinist is Alan Basaldi and percussion by April Centroni and vocals by Lubana Alcantar. Yes, when I was first creating the production...
30 seconds, Andrea. It's not fair, but we have 30 seconds.
Sure. It was supposed to premiere in spring 2011, and the Arab Spring started to happen, and Tahrir started to happen while we were making the show. And so I knew that I had to end it with a ray of hope that uprising represented, as you said earlier, the hope for democracy.
I hope so, Andrea. And really, thank you so much for being on True Talk. It's wonderful always to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was.
And I hope folks will watch the film.
I hope so too. I'm going to talk about it. It's 11 Reflections of September. 11 Reflections of September. You can check the work of Andrea Assaf if you go to art. Action. She's all over Facebook. This is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM. WMNF Tampa, NPR News is next.